Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone back to Breaking It Down. Our special guest for this segment is Rosie Malik-Yonan. How are you, Rosie?
I'm good, Frank. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, yeah, I'm thrilled to have you. You're an actress, a director, a producer. You're a published author. You've made at least one documentary film. How many documentaries have you made?
I've made one. I'm in the process of making another one. I'm also in the process of writing the play to my book, which I'm hoping to produce next year.
Yeah, and you know, you're most importantly, I should say, you're a human rights activist.
Yes, that's correct.
Now, where were you born?
I was actually born in Iran, but I am 100% Assyrian.
Assyrian, okay. Now, a lot of people might not understand what that means. So you were born in Iran, and you're Assyrian. So your ancestors are from where?
Well, Assyrians are a nation without a country right now. We're a stateless nation.
Sort of like Palestine.
Sort of. But we have existed for the past thousands of years. Actually, we just celebrated the year 6764. And so we've been around all these years, and we've sort of scattered all over the world. Every time there's been a genocide, every time we've been killed, we've kind of migrated to other areas. And that's sort of become our saving grace, I guess. We're like, I always say, we're like running waters. You can't catch all of us because we're so spread everywhere.
Wow. Interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, but our Assyria was actually located in what we know today as Iraq.
Okay.
So our capital was the Nineveh Plains in northern Iraq.
Is that in the Kurdistan area? I'm helping you with my geography.
Yeah, it's in that area. That's correct.
Okay, and now, how long have you been here in America?
I've been here for most of my life. I left Iran when I was very young. I was still in high school, about 17 years old. So I came to the States. I've been here more than, I don't know, 40 years now.
Now, you know, obviously there had to be some kind of culture shock. You're coming from Iran to here. And, you know, I spoke to an author, and she's Karen Garvey. She is a self-help author, for lack of a better term, and she speaks quite often in the Middle East. And one of the things that she pointed out was that some of the areas there were starting to be open to her brand of book. And now I don't, again, other than, you know, the broad base of self-help, I don't know how else to categorize it. I'm not, you know, all that familiar with Karen's work, but I imagine that the empowerment of women is not at the top of the list over there, and the men rule over there, right? And they're certainly for lack of a better term, they're the kings of their castles there, and women have very little rights in certain areas.
That's very correct, and that's probably one of the main reasons why my parents were very quick to send me out of the country to leave Iran. They knew I was very outspoken. I always wrote anti any kind of establishment. I was always an activist. Even as a child, I always spoke up, and they feared that would get me into trouble. So they got me out of the country, and I realized coming to America was such a blessing. I absolutely love this country. This is my adopted country, even though I am an Assyrian, full 100% Assyrian. I understand all the limitations that there are living in the Middle East, and I could never do the things that I do here. I'm living my dream. I'm an author. I was a concert pianist. I'm an actor. And these are not things that I could have done back there. And yes, all of the Middle East is ruled by the male population. When I lived in Iran, it wasn't this bad. It was still the old regime. It was the Shah's regime. So there was still a more acceptance of women in certain roles. My mother was a big activist. She created an organization for women to give them freedom of speech and a lot of things. So, but now that's all gone. That's completely gone. And most of the Middle East is that way. This is why most of the things that I write about, I would probably get killed if I were back in the Middle East. Every time I write an article, I publish a book, something, I do anything, I get death threats. And that's just an indicative of the nature of Middle East.
Rosie,
can't get away from that.
Rosie Malek Yonan is our very special guest, and she's kind of a Renaissance woman, I would say. She does a little bit of everything. But let's focus again on the human rights here. You said mm-hmm. your parents wanted to get you out of there before you got yourself into trouble. Now, you expanded on that a little bit here, but let's talk about that. What is getting into trouble, getting yourself into trouble at 17 years old in Iran compared to getting yourself in trouble here? What could happen to you?
You could be executed. You can be stoned to death. You lose all your, not just your liberties, but you lose your life. And it doesn't just stop with you. It continues with your family members. So just for thinking thoughts, certain thoughts, or putting them down in a poem or in a song or in a story, you'll get into trouble for that. For example, in Turkey, they put characters of books on trial. So an author who's written a book, for example, my book, The Crimson Field, which greatly does with the Assyrian genocide, the topic of the Assyrian genocide, if it were published in Turkey or if it got to Turkey, the characters, first of all, would be put on trial, and then I would. You just cannot talk about these things. You cannot think about these things. So it's, and for a young woman who's just discovering herself and discovering, you know, her creating her own beliefs, putting them on paper, that will get you in a lot of trouble.
What was your father like? If your mom was open to women's rights in Iran, I imagine your father was a pretty open-minded, gentleman certainly from that area.
Absolutely. My father was also an activist. My father was the biggest advocate for the Assyrians. He actually was the cause for Assyrians to get a seat in the Iranian parliament, to have their voices recognized, to be able to vote, to give them an identity and not be looked at as second-rate citizens that didn't matter. And this was just, right after, not too long after the Assyrian genocide had happened. So for the Assyrians to make such a turnaround, to be accepted as legitimate members of society, it was a big, big deal. And to this day, Assyrians still have a seat in the Iranian parliament as a group, as a minority group that's accepted. Assyrians, on the whole, they are all Christians. We are a Christian nation. So we are a minority wherever we live in the Middle East.
How many people died in the Assyrian genocide?
750,000 people died. That was two-thirds of our nation. They were wiped out, and the areas that it occurred were southeastern Turkey and in northwestern Iran.
In what time period?
This coincided with World War I. From 1914 to 1918, two-thirds of the Assyrian population was wiped out.
See, this is something that doesn't get a lot of press. It doesn't get a lot of attention. And why is that?
No, it doesn't, because, first of all, because we are a stateless nation. Who's going to listen to us? Where would we speak about this? We can't even open the subject in United Nations. There has to be another entity, another government to open the subject so that we can speak about this, and nobody will step forward. The Assyrian genocide has not been recognized except for one country.
What country is that?
Sweden has accepted it. There is a huge, huge, huge population of Assyrian refugees that migrated to Sweden both during World War One and during the Iraq War when Assyrians were getting wiped out again.
We are speaking to writer, actress, documentary filmmaker, a little bit of everything, Rosie Malek Yonan, and we're talking about the Assyrian genocide. And again, the time period you say is World War One. What is the rationalization that people give for not recognizing that this is a genocide?
Well, obviously, Turkey does not want to recognize the genocide. United States cannot recognize it because it has diplomatic relations with Turkey, and if they do recognize it, then that won't work for the U.S., and it won't work for Turkey. And other countries won't because it's a big risk for them. They don't want to step in and do this. And because we are a stateless nation, we basically don't have a voice. And for me, I realized approaching this through the political path was not getting anywhere, even though I gave a congressional testimony in 2005, even though a year later Congress signed off on a $10 million aid that got sent to Assyrians in Iraq, but it still is not enough. And I recognize that as an artist, I do have a bigger voice. I can write books, I can make films, I can do plays, I can write articles. Nobody can stop me from doing those things. As long as they're within my own control, nobody can stop my voice. They can threaten me. I get plenty of death threats. But this is the only clear avenue that I see that could be successful in getting the Assyrian genocide recognized.
Let me ask this a different way. When people don't recognize the genocide, are they saying, well, this was an uprising or this was a war, this was an act of war? How do you explain 750,000 deaths of one people?
I don't know that they can explain it. There is no explanation.
Is there a history? Is there something written about this, or is it just known and it's just covered up because of?
No! This is the biggest cover up. There are so many documents, so many scholars. Professor Gabriel Yonan from Germany, has uncovered so many of these documents in archives in Leipzig, in different areas. She's translated them. There are so many documents in the Turkish archives, even though the Turkish government has said, oh, yes, now they're open. Anyone can look at these. They can view them, but they're nowhere to be found. If you really dig, they are there. They are available. There's a famous book called The Blue Book. In detail, the genocide is described. There are various communications. There's tons of stuff. And it wasn't just the Assyrians, the Armenians and the Greeks. These are the three Christian nations that lived in that area, and they all got massacred. It wasn't just us. But because the Assyrians don't have a country, we kind of got lost because we were too busy trying to save our lives with the refugees. And I mean, my own grandmother, 18 years old, had to walk from Iran to the Russian frontier to save future generations. I'm that future generation. If she hadn't done that, I wouldn't be here talking to you. So while the Assyrians are busy trying to get back on their feet and trying to save their future, their history is being rewritten, and it's all being wiped out.
Rosie, give us the population again of the Assyrian people.
Today?
Yes.
Today there's about 4 million Assyrians that are scattered all over the world, mainly concentrating in Sweden, in Australia, a lot in Europe, here in the U.S., in San Diego, in Chicago, Detroit, we're everywhere.
Now, Sweden, I understand because they recognize the genocide. Do they also, they recognize the Assyrian people.
Yes.
What about Australia? Is it just considered a safe base, or is there some relationship between the Australian government and the Assyrian people?
No, there is a relationship. Actually, they are really helping to get the genocide recognized there. They have allowed genocide monuments to be erected, and that's a big thing to get done. to actually get a permission from the government to erect a genocide monument. So, you know, we are making steps. We are taking little baby steps, and we are getting some attention. But it's not enough, but we are doing it. France also, you know, accepts the genocide. You can't even talk against genocide in France.
Now, what is the official route to go to recognize an event, this horrific event, the Assyrian genocide of World War One or the World War One time period? What is the official process that one would go to get the United States, for example, to recognize it?
The United States will not recognize it. That will never happen.
But I mean,
we have tried. We did when Hillary Clinton was approached, but because of the U.S.-Turkish relationship, political relationship, this won't happen. It's an impossibility.
President Obama, does he have an official stance on the Assyrian genocide? Has he ever said no comment? Has he ever commented on it at all?
No, he has not commented on it, and I don't think he will ever comment on it.
Has any president ever commented on it?
No. There have been Senate and congressional members. That's how I got my congressional invitation to give a testimony, but that's as far as it went.
Now, what happens when you do that, when you give your testimony? Are people yawning? Are people rolling their eyes? Are people just not paying attention to you?
No, actually, it was quite the opposite. I got very good response from the Congress, members of Congress that were present there that day. Actually, they promised they would go to Iraq. They would take my report with them to look into matters, and that did happen. But beyond that, it was, okay, let's just send some money and keep them quiet. That's what it ended up being.
And when it was $10 million is what they sent, right?
$10 million, yeah. I mean, the population of the Assyrian population in Iraq was the greatest throughout the world. There was 1.4 million Assyrians. Today, there's less than 300,000.
Now, are they assimilated into the culture? For example, when we had the two Iraqi wars, the first Gulf War and then the subsequent action taken after 9/11 by President George W. Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Are there Assyrians that were fighting with Saddam Hussein's troops? Or I'm sure there were, but I mean, were a large number of them, or for the most part, did you stay out of that?
No. Assyrians have always stayed out of all these wars. The thing that happens is they immediately get attacked, because they are a minority Christian religion living in a predominantly Muslim country. So when the U.S. attacks Iraq, they are looked at as, oh, the Christians are attacking the Muslims, so let's take it out on these other Christians that live right here. So immediately our churches started getting bombed. They've bombed more than 72 churches in Iraq.
Now, what would the leadership structure of the Assyrian people be? Would it be clergy? Is there a government within a government that they have? And by the way, let me remind the listeners that we are speaking to Rosie Malik Yonan, and we have about 2 minutes left with Rosie. And, I feel like we need a lot more time to explain this. It's very complicated. It's fascinating, but obviously it's a horrible plight that the Assyrian people are going through. But to answer that, what's the structure? What's the organizational structure, or the leadership structure of the Assyrian people?
Well, depending on what country we're in, for example, in Iraq, we do have representatives in the Iraqi government, but they don't really have that much power. There are many religious denominations within the Assyrian nation. There's the Church of the East, there's the Catholic Chaldeans, there's the Syriac. They each have their own patriarchs. So most people look at their church as their leaders and take their cue from their churches. But really, Assyrians are not fighters. They're not warriors. They just want to live peacefully within whatever country they're living, especially in the Middle East. They don't take up wars. They don't go retaliating and burning up mosques just because a church has been burned. They just want to coexist somehow.
Now, Israel doesn't take a stance. The state of Israel does not take a stance on the Assyrian people or the genocide?
No, no. And what's sad is that I think I look at the Assyrian genocide as the introduction, as a precursor to the Jewish Holocaust. Because at that time, Hitler was a young officer, young army soldier when all these atrocities were happening to the Assyrian. And I'm sure he must have witnessed some. And so this was just the beginning, and it was a setup for the Holocaust. When such a big genocide happens, when so many people lose their lives and nothing is said about it, then it sort of sends the message that it's okay. We can look the other way.
Rosie Malek Yonan, please give us a website where people could find out more about you, your work, and certainly the Assyrian cause.
My website is rosiemalekyonan.com, RosieMalekYonan.com, and also through my book's website, thecrimsonfield.com.
Rosie Malek Yonan, thank you very much for being here, and let's speak again soon.
Okay, thank you so much, Frank. Thank you for having me.